Welcome to the Time Shifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. I'd love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with the show. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Time Shifters Pod, or you can send us a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and please check us and our fellow podcasters out over on podchaser.com. Please rate and review the show at any of these outlets. All these links can be found on timeshifterspodcast.com. Now let's head to the Time Shifter studio and start the show. Everyone, and welcome back to Time Shifters. I am here. I'm your host, Christopher, as usual. And as usual, again, I'm sorry, I'm a little all flustered today, and we'll get into that later. But with me is Tom. How you doing, Tom?
Good. Apparently, maybe a little better than you.
Sorry. Yeah, haven't quite got everything. I had my ducks in a row, and now they've all scattered, and I'm trying to put them all back together here.
They've quacked up.
Today's opening of the show, instead, rather than any news or general discussion or anything, I actually want to go back a couple episodes to when we reviewed the collection of short films, The Battle in Space, The Armada Attacks. You know, we liked some of.
We did.
In two of the short films of, was there, I already lost track.
There
was there four
five.
Or five? Five? All right. Well, there's two that really stood out to us. Mm-hmm. The one was Karante, which ended the piece.
Yes.
Which we really liked. And we spent a good hour or so, I think, after we recorded, trying to figure out who did what. What filmmaker was responsible for what short film, because unfortunately Battle in Space did not give the credit.
Yeah, no, the final credits didn't break it out to what was which short film.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karante was actually was done by Luis Tinico. And I actually went ahead and tracked him down. He works with, I'm not sure how exactly the name of the company is said or is pronounced. It's Onirikal Studio, O-N-I-R-I-K-A-L Studio. It's a visual effects company. Mm-hmm. And he, I think he actually heads the place or whatever, but I was able to actually email through them and got in touch with him and got an email from him.
Excellent.
I sent him a message, let him know how much we enjoyed the film and where we saw it and how much we enjoyed it. And I wanted to read his reply back so you could hear it yourself. This is the first time you're hearing this as well.
Yeah, please do. This will be a treat for me.
All right. Says, hello, Christopher. Says, I'm very glad you liked the short film. Yes, the so-called Armada Attacks thing, it's a very bad distribution package option. I'm not sure why they put together these projects with no separated credits, with this bad marketing strategy, etc. But nothing to do with me. Distribution strategies, who knows? Says, about Karante, yes, I did it. Says, this was a short film made in our visual effects company, Onirikal Studios. And it was written and directed by him. It was a 3 years project done in spare time, weekends, and working between other client projects. And as Onirikal Studios is mainly a post-production service company, not a production company so far. So very happy with the final product, with the result, with the success in film festivals around the world, about 200 official selections and awards, 65 international awards, and very happy with the audience response. Right now, we are preparing a new feature film project, also produced by Onirikal Studio, and again written and directed by me. It's called Antares, an indie, low-budget, drama-thriller feature film with a science environment background. We are right now in pre-production. And I did offer or ask if he wanted to come on the show, and he says that as my schedule is busy one, the time zone doesn't help. But and he says his English is very bad. We will abort the Skype call so far, okay? Says we can wait for the feature film premiere and do it then.
Fair enough.
But he thanks us. He said, thank you very much for your interest in Karante, and thanks for contacting. And it says this kind of email makes us know that the work was worth it.
Excellent.
It's really great to actually reach out to some of these guys and let them know how much we enjoyed their work.
No, it is. And it's even better when they actually respond back.
Exactly.
But because that's excellent. I mean, the notion that he's got a full feature that he's working on, I'd be excited to catch that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll definitely, it's one of those things where I'll keep kind of looking, checking in and, you know, follow on Twitter and waiting for the posts and something like that. Even better than just an email back is when we actually get a chance to talk to him.
Yes.
And we actually got a chance to do that with Lucas Kendall, who did another one of the shorts that we really liked. Again, I don't remember the name of the short in the Battle in Space film.
It was just named for the ship or whatever it was.
Yeah, so I don't recall what they saddled it with. But the actual short film is called Sky Fighter, and you can actually go and watch this. It's on the Dust YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and you can go watch the thing in its entirety as it was meant to be presented.
Yes.
And Lucas Kendall was the writer and director of this, and this was a first-time endeavor for him. I was able to reach out to him, and whirlwind, we actually got a chance to talk to him. And right before we sat down to record this is when we sat down and talked to him. And I wanted to share that right now with everybody. So here is Tom and I talking with Lucas Kendall. We are now joined by the creator and the editor-in-chief of Film Score Monthly. He's also the writer-director of the short film Sky Fighter, and we have him on the line. Lucas Kendall, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to speak with you. I want to get to Sky Fighter. First, I want to know, we got to talk a little bit about Film Score Monthly and how that got started, because I love the story, because it starts thanks to another publication, which is a much-loved and sorely missed publication, Starlog.
That's true. I was 15 years old, and I sent a letter to Starlog saying about a bunch of things, but then at the end I said, does anyone want to start like a soundtracks club and write me? And 10 people wrote me, and I started sending them a newsletter. This was before the internet. This was 1990. And I just started sending them this newsletter every month, and it grew and became this sort of fanzine magazine. And I did it in high school, and I took it with me when I was off at college, and then I graduated and moved to Los Angeles and kept doing it, and it became a record label. And it's still around as an online magazine and a website, and we're selling off the what's left of the CD catalog. And I still am involved with some CDs from other specialty labels.
Gotcha. What brought your love of the film score and the soundtracks? Is it just because from watching movies, you were just attracted to it, or did you have a music background?
I mean, at the time, I had a music background, and then I was a little kid who took music lessons. But I was not. There was no special talent or connection beyond that. I loved movies, and I liked the sound of symphonic film music, and I loved the Star Wars scores and the Star Trek film and TV scores, and it was a way for me to relive the emotions of those stories in a different art form, in the musical underscore, and I, like a lot of people, really fell in love with it. And at the time, you know, you couldn't just go to IMDb and find out what movies James Horner had done. You had to go to the video store and turn over the video boxes. And that's how I rented Brainstorm. So it was a different time. And into that darkness, I tried to bring some information to other people like me who I thought would like that stuff.
Yeah, fantastic. I just love the entire story, that it just starts out as an ad in a magazine and just keeps growing and growing. And I have to imagine that when you wrote that first letter, you had no idea that you would eventually start creating CDs and publishing a like full magazine, et cetera, et cetera.
No, I was desperately lonely. My parents were divorced, and you know, I had no friends in high school. And my only friends were the Star Trek characters. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, I,
But no, I had no idea, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you grew up kind of in the same time as we did, where at the time, being a science fiction fan was not exactly, didn't put you on the biggest pedestal.
No, it was totally like a wedgie invitation.
So we talked a little bit about Film Score Monthly. We got a review screener of this film that has been put together called Battle in Space, The Armada Attacks. And it ended up being a collection of short films, one of which included your film Skyfighter, although it was given a completely different name.
Can I ask you about that? Because I haven't seen it. They didn't. You know, God forbid they send me a screener link.
And this is part of why we wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, did they? I mean, but I don't want to complain about them either, because they're a company and they said, hey, we really like your short and we'd really like distribution rights and maybe we can package it in an anthology and make you some money. I said, that sounds great, because I went badly out of pocket to finish the post, because those effects, you know, there's a lot of effects and, yes. You know, I know that by Star Wars standards, it looks sort of primitive, but there, you know, there's a lot of artistry there and there's a lot of precision and it was very expensive. So I wanted to make some more money. And so when these guys were interested in my film, I said, great. And I didn't quite realize that it was going to be like they're kind of Robotech it and like kind of, you know, re-engineer what the mythology was. And so did they alter, you know, my precious movie by putting, no. Does it have the title card in the 26th century, or they chop that off?
What they did is they start the show off, or they start the movie off with like a monologue, a voiceover talking about aliens and space wizards or something like that that have conquered the galaxy, and there's a group of people that are fighting back, and you know these are their stories.
Right, because I saw the reviews, except for you guys, were pretty brutal. Because it was, people didn't know what it was, and they thought they're like, you know, you start watching a story, and then in 15 minutes there's new characters, and then in another 20 minutes there's new characters. You're like, whoa, you know, this isn't what I thought I was watching.
Well, we said that as much in our review as we went into this film expecting something else entirely, and then once we figured out what it was, we were like, okay. We're just going to look at these things as individual films because that's what these are. And it was very poorly. There was no true through line like it sells itself to be.
I was just glad that people seemed to like mine and they liked the last one, which I haven't seen. I don't know the others. I really, you know, it's hard. And there's no good comes out of my like complaining about this presentation. I'm glad they wanted it, and hopefully, you know, I'll get a check for $200 in 6 months, but we'll see.
This was a great opportunity to feature some short film that clearly had a lot of love and heart put into them, lot of effort, and some of them were actually quite good, yours being one of the ones that
were
one of our favorites, which is what spawned us to have Christopher reach out to you, even because one of the conversations we were having around this film is, since they've packaged this way as if it's some coherent story, at least based off their opening, when we settled into seeing them as the individual short films that they were, that's how we decided to break out what we were discussing about them. And yours and I am blanking on what they called the second, the last one.
I think the Carante, or is that the real name of it? Or
The Carante.
Yeah, that's the proper name. Yeah, like I said, they gave each segment a completely different name, so it took us a while to actually track down and figure out what was what.
Yeah, because when they go into the final credits, they're not broken out by the individual films. It's just one stream.
Yeah, I was a little afraid that my cast and crew might see this on their resumes now and go, what the hell is that? And then see that it, you know, got 2 stars at IMDb and be a little irritated with me. It's great that you were interested in talking to me, because it's such a saturated environment now that, like, there, you know, there's WandaVision, there's The Mandalorian, there's, you know, there's Wonder Woman, and it's like these massive things, and not all of them are great, but they sure look great. So you really got to be passionate to then want to delve into, you know, the smaller things and the indie things, and you know, I get that spirit. I mean, when I was doing CDs, I released all kinds of obscure stuff. So I know the sort of the treats and the fun of finding the obscure. But thanks, you know, for being interested mm-hmm. in mine, which I was happy with, and it did pretty well for Dust. But I know why. It's because I said, let me guess what gets the most amount of clicks for you guys. And is it Bikini Babes and Celebrities? And she said, no, it's Bikini Babes and Spaceships. And I said, well, I got the spaceship. So I had him do a custom thumbnail of a spaceship blowing up another spaceship. And I knew that would grab people's attention. Mm-hmm. But whenever they have some like Bikini Babe, it gets like 20 million views. And then there's one, like the most viewed short at Dust, which I, you know, like a chump, watched, and, you know, I was like, well, how good is this? We got 24 million views. And, you know, it's not that good. But the first comment that has like 1,000, you know, likes is like, roses are red, violets are blue. I came for the thumbnail and so did you.
Well, you know, you were commenting on you chipping in for the final edit to get the effects in, and I have to say, well worth it. I actually found your film very professional, very slick looking, that was one of the ones that, like, we were just saying, let's chop off the front half of this movie, and we were all in on this.
Well, thank you. I gotta praise the DP, Dan Marks, who was really, really very, very good DP. And he lit that ship. And, you know, I knew the least amount about the cinematography. So, I mean, I was so dumb. I was like, when she says that line, can you zoom in a little? He goes, Lucas, I don't have a zoom lens. So I said, well, can you just like walk closer to her then? He's like, yes. So, I mean, I was really at sea. So I told him what I wanted. And he came over to my house, and I showed him a little bit of Alien and a little bit of The Empire Strikes Back inside the Millennium Falcon. And I said, look at that lighting. And he's like, yeah, I know how to do this. We're, you know, we're going to have self-illumination, and I get the colors. And he did it. And there was a spaceship set in basically North Hollywood that we used. Yeah. And it's been in like everything. Did you guys watch that Making of Alien documentary? It's on, it's pretty good. I can't remember what it's called. It's called like Memory Origins of Alien.
No, I have not.
Oh, it's pretty good. They shot some stuff on the spaceships. This spaceship set has been in probably like a dozen movies and a dozen shorts and TV commercials. Cause it's like this really thrifty knockoff of the Alien set, where it's got this like mesh, you know, those floors that looks like this cool grid with the light coming up. It's just dishwasher trays, commercial industrial dishwasher trays upside down. And so they have holes. So like you go through it, and it has all these interesting textures, like these weird discs on the walls. And then you get close and it's potted plants. It's just the plastic pots. So it's real DIY stuff, but they're very good hosts, and they're called Laurel Canyon Stages. And so we used their set, and then we dressed it. I thought we lit it very, very well. But he really did the look of it, you know. And he's the one who said, you really got to shoot this in scope. And I said, are you sure? Because it's so confined. And he's like, no, you really do it anamorphic, trust me. I was like, okay. And so we did.
Yeah, no, it was definitely felt like one of the more professionally shot of all the shorts that we saw in that film, and definitely one of the more professionally shot short films that I've seen. So I think, yeah, absolutely made the right call there.
Did you guys find the music annoying?
Annoying? No, I didn't find it annoying. I did watch it again yesterday. I found it, at least in the very beginning, in the opening, what do you want to call it, the theme or something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the right word is. It definitely, you notice it.
Yeah, because I come from film scores and I like prominent sounding scores, you know, that was at my request. And I wanted to do like a retro synth score because it's not like we had money for an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And so the composer I worked with, I that was the direction I gave him. And then we got some occasion. There's some people who just have like an allergic reaction to it and say like, that was such a cool movie, but this cheesy old synths is Casio is horrible. And so it was embarrassing to me. And I felt bad. And I really felt bad for the composer because it wasn't his choice. It was, I mean, he did the music, but, at my direction. So it was just one of the things that I thought it was cool. And I thought it gave a real, sound to the short that people will remember, but some people didn't like it, and so I was a little self-conscious about it.
I think once you settle into it and settle into the film itself, I thought it was fine. It was just when it first starts, I will admit that it was kind of like, wow, I noticed this synth music playing.
Yeah, well, thank you. I understand, and I haven't watched it myself in a while. You get sick of it. And, but there are a lot of things about it I'm proud of, and I'm proud of the performances and the cast and how we cut it. You know, Rob is a very good editor, and I mean, cutting in those flash cuts and going from the dark spaceship to the bright outdoors. And we got a very, very fine actor, Eric Palladino, to play the dad. And we got a terrific child actor who I really had a nice time meeting his family, and he doesn't have any lines, but he actually looks like the guy, which I couldn't believe. Yes. When my the woman who cast this, Christine, she cast Boogie Nights, and she's a friend, and she did it like as a favor, and she's got great taste, and so she found that cast, and in fact Jessica Bohr is really good, and she's been on Shameless.
No, actually, I was going to come around to the cast because your cast was again very very small, tight cast, but they had an excellent rapport. They set the mood very well. I was just completely sucked in into this short little story. I know I likened it to an incredibly good Twilight Zone.
Well, thank you. And in fact, there is an Outer Limits in the 90s that it bears some similarities to, which I remember seeing half of it like when it aired 25 years ago. Thanks. I appreciate it. And I thought they had really good chemistry. And I thought it's the illusion of movie making because it was pretty last minute, and they were cast at the last minute, and we never met each other until that morning. I mean, there was no rehearsal. Oh, wow. There was no auditions. It was just, we identified people who we thought would be good and then hired them. And I had one meeting with Tom Madden, who plays John. But we had an actress drop out on us. And then, like at the last minute, we got Jessica Bohr, who was doing Shameless during the week. She did Shameless on Friday, did our thing on the weekend, and went back to Shameless on Monday. And I met her that morning. She goes, "Hey, nice to meet you." And so it was really, and I'd never directed anything. So it was pretty terrifying, actually, because I was paying for it, you know, and there was a lot of pressure on me because There were some people who were involved with the production who were very uncomfortable at how late we were going with it without it being cast, you know, because we were really on the cusp of having a shoot day with no cast. And so I was getting a lot of pushback to just get anybody, but I wanted to hold out for people I thought was right. Oh, and then I got sick. So I like never get a fever. I get a fever like once every 10 years. But my kids, who are now 6 and were 4 at the time, like they came home from Montessori school with a fever, and then I got it. So I couldn't even do meetings really, or I couldn't even be there on the set when they were lighting it because I had my kids, and the kids had a fever and I had a fever and I felt horrible. So it was like really, really terribly stressful. But directing is stressful. And then it was especially stressful directing because that set is enclosed, and I had to be on a monitor out and on headphones. So, you know, when you give your actors notes, it's really kind of rude to just yell, can you just look more, you know, just like, hey, do it, you know, do it, look away when, you know, you want to get up, take off the headphones, walk in and talk to your actors and then walk out. So there's a lot of constant just shuffling around and sort of remote, you know, remote control. It's just, I'm sure real directors are very accustomed to it, but it was a lot to learn. But I liked directing, and I thought I did it. You know, I thought I got good. I thought they gave good performances and created that illusion that they were, that they did know each other and that they were in this predicament. And but it was because they didn't have the preparation to really study it. It was really just on a line by line basis, trying to explain. You know, let's get the tone bigger, smaller, and trying to say, you know, don't. I remember saying, pretend this is like a marriage, you know, this is, you know, so it's, I want the grown-up reaction. I don't want the adolescent reaction. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, so just learning how to direct actors when I've never done it, but I hope I get the chance to do it again without paying for it.
Yeah.
Although I got to give you credit for the Indiegogo pay.
Thank you.
Because... it was fun just even catching that.
Well, that was my peeps. They really stepped up. And in fact, I owe them a Blu-ray and a CD. I've been very delinquent on that, and I feel terrible about it. I need to get it made. It was just so hard when COVID hit because their finances took a hit. And I got to autograph it and get the composer to autograph it. And just there's some logistical and financial things. But I'll get that perk out to those guys. Because they supported my dream. You know, what else can you say? But thank you.
One of the things when we saw this thing and we discussed it in our review is that in just, what is it, maybe just 15 seconds that this thing is, there's so much universe that is in this thing. And it's a really great example of you show, don't tell. There's no, like, long exposition about the universe that they're in. The situation that is happening explains all you need to explain, and it's all condensed into this short film. And it's like, it's fantastic because we know about, you know, there's the space battles, there's cybernetic implants, you know, there's this, it's odd that she's not wired. All this stuff is all in there, and it's all condensed into this. I'm like, that's a big universe that you're building. And it's all in this little package. That's what one of the things we really appreciated.
Well, I wish you were, you know, working at Amazon. I mean, not stuffing boxes, but making movies. But look, that was what we wanted. That's what the whole team wanted. And it's very gratifying to hear you say that. And I also was proud of the, as far as show, don't tell, you know, the effects. Something, you know, on YouTube, like, YouTube comments are not what I hope aliens see as their first exposure to humanity.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of, I mean, but sometimes I get comments like, these effects look like, you know, stupid Atari. Because they were, you know, as I said, I didn't have a lot of money to do it at full res. And,
right.
And I asked the visual effects artist, whose name is Tobias Richter, and his company is called the Lightworks. And he's done a lot of the Star Trek fan films. So that's where he comes from. But he's a space guy, and I never even met him. I never even talked to him. He's in Germany. So we just emailed, and I would mark up, I print out things and write on it with markers. But even those effects are, I asked for them to be stripped down and very simple because you needed to actually learn as the audience through what the world is by watching those holograms. And, the one thing I'm proud of is that for all the snotty comments I got once in a while that like these effects are kind of primitive, nobody said like, I don't understand them. And you take it for granted. And it is so hard. I mean, it is so demanding to have your effects. You need to know when those ships separate or when the thing turns around or when the scope turns around, like who's shooting what and who's hiding from what. And is this the good guy or the bad guy? And that's all narrated by these purely visual holograms. And when we were editing it too, Rob and I had nothing. So we just had the cutaways. And Rob was saying, dude, how do we know how long to make this? How long is this effect going to be? And I just said, let's just take our best guess, you know, and let's just feel the rhythm of it. And then we can make the hologram simpler or more complex based on what we need. But I think out of like 100 shots, and there were probably a good like 30 just inserts of that hologram, I think there were only like, there was maybe two or three that we had to change the duration of, and maybe two that we switched places, but they didn't change because the rhythms of it were set by the editing, and that we knew, you know, his eye, I want to look at him. I want to look at the hologram telling him this. I want to look at her. She's reacting. Anyway, I'm going back to the mindset I had when we were doing it, but it was a ton of work. And that's something that usually is like 40 people doing it. And in our case, it was, you know, it was like four people doing it.
Well, see, that's what could be appreciated by this. It's clear that this was done by somebody that had a love and background of sci-fi, because one of the things that I enjoyed most about the piece is that you didn't dumb it down for us. You didn't feel the need to have the characters or some computer explain everything that we're seeing to us and beat us over the head with it. You've taken what most would know from the being fans of sci-fi and know if you give us just enough, we're not stupid. We'll latch on to it so that we can focus more on the story.
Well, yeah, that was, thank you. I agree. And that was what we tried to do. And I do come from that. I love Galactica. I love Robotech. I like The Expanse now. Yeah, we all know those tropes, and you can figure out from the behavior of the characters if something's good or bad or how much trouble they're in. And then you can focus on the emotion. You can actually have a story. Most of these short films go wrong. They go wrong, first of all, because they start and it's like, you know, it's an aerial shot that takes 45 seconds. And then it says, you know, Bubble Films presents. And so it's just like, it does 2 minutes of just this glacial setup, which you can do if you're Kubrick. You know, you can do it if you're Terrence Malick. You can't do it if you're nobody making a short film. So that's why when mine starts, and that's why the music was kind of obnoxious, because I wanted just to grab people and then just start and just start giving them something to relate to. To relate to this guy who wakes up and doesn't know who he is. And then it's like, yes, there are various derivative elements of it. It's like Memento in space or whatever people said. I welcome that. It's totally true. At the time I made this short, I had producers on board who were interested in the script. And I said, well, I want to direct it. And they said, well, you know, you've never directed. I said, no, I'll make a demo for you to prove that I can direct it. So I was not as much interested in making this as a proof of concept for the story as much as I was as a proof of director so that they would approve me. And then they did approve me. And then what I learned is trying to get a movie made is just brutal. And these guys, we made some offers to actors that they put up the money for. And then when COVID hit, their company fell apart. So now I'm on my own. So it's hard work, and it's very competitive because I made some mistakes in the calculus of how to get this movie made. I thought, okay, let me just have two main characters. And then I, you know, in my infinite stupidity, I thought, well, make them young because it was a young person's story and young actors are cheaper. And they are, but they're not, because you need to do something. And they're like sort of two different ways you can get a movie financed. One is like Netflix says, great, we'll make it. And then you're making a movie for Netflix and you get who's right for the story. Or if Blumhouse wants it, then it can be unknowns. But if you're going the other way, if you're going the international financing model, you need, that's why all these movies have Bruce Willis with a gun. Because it's just a cash grab. Because that's, they, or they have, it's the movie that Lance Hendrickson says he just, you know, he flies to Romania. And that's, you know, that's all he knows about. And then Lance Hendrickson is running around in Romania for 2 weeks and they get his close-ups and then he goes home. So they do all these movies, but those are the Gerard Butler action movies. And they are all these movies for like Nicolas Cage and these people who were movie stars and were coming down from being movie stars. But I can't use a 50-year-old fighter pilot. This movie doesn't work with people of that age. It's not believable, and it's not the story that it's telling. So then the problem is that the younger actors don't have the international renown to support the financing, and the people who would support the financing are people who are blowing up, and there's no way we're getting Adam Driver because he's making Academy Award movie, you know, he's winning Academy Awards for Scorsese and stuff. So you're kind of in this, then you're like, whoops, you know, it's this donut hole. And I found that when we were trying to get this movie made with me as the director, then all these young actors, they don't want to work for me. They want to work for Rian Johnson. They want to work for famous directors. So, and then I made a movie that's two people in a room, but it also needs like $5 million in visual effects. So I do have a feature script, and it was actually a good thing that the movie didn't go forward a year ago, because it was an amateurish script that I've since completely overhauled three times, and I'm much more proud of it now. And I hope to find a new financier, and I hope to get stars or get actors that'll support the budget and go and make it. In the meantime, I'm writing other things, and I'm trying to get hooked up with a manager, a literary manager or a director manager representation that could then take it out, because it's just brutal, you know. It is a brutal environment trying to sell a script and get a movie made. It is so competitive, and it's full of so many famous people trying to get their stuff done that is really hard to break in. It's been very, very, very humbling. And that's the end of that monologue, and I hope I haven't...
No, it's really great to actually kind of get an inside view, because it's something that I think most of us... It's something we probably take for granted, or something we just don't think about, and we don't understand how difficult it is for even the famous people to get their movies out there sometimes. They have ideas, or they have something they want to do, but because that idea isn't what's selling right now, and my gosh, if you don't have a name, if you don't have a, you know, fame behind you, it has to be just nearly impossible. So it is nice to actually hear this from the inside, to know that is the case.
And it hit me on the short, because when I was done with the short, I was like, wow, I punched my ticket, and just wait till they see this. And people saw this, but they were like, because it's a really, it's a good sci-fi short. Is it the most mind-blowing sci-fi short? It's not the best sci-fi short there's ever made. It's not a total game changer. The effects are servicing the story. The effects are not so revolutionary that they would make people just go, wow, you know. It was really just to be a solid, you know, well-told story with good direction and good acting to prove that I could be approved as a director. So it's, you know, it's hard, and audiences seem to like it, and it's got over 1 million views, and people have been complimentary of it, but it hasn't been the game changer I hoped. Because, again, it's just such a competitive field.
Well, and right now, too, the field has been saturated with things like Avengers or, you know, pick whatever superhero film that you want to talk about, where everything is very polished and very perfect. And it must make it hard for room. It must make it hard to make room for if something where you just want to tell a really good, solid story, but you don't have all that spit and polish.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that the things that do get on people's radar are the festival hits, and like that that pretty cool movie, what's it called? The Vasta Night?
I don't know.
You didn't see Vasta Night? Mm-mm. It's the 50s... alien thing. There was a big Sundance or Slam Dance hit, and it's on Amazon. You guys got to watch it. You'll love it. It's really stylishly made. It's got this sort of, it's got this really cool tracking shot where this camera just goes whooshing over this town, or through this town at like 3 feet off the ground, for miles. And it's very, very visually distinctive.
All right, cool. Yeah, it'll add it to the list.
Yeah, you guys should watch that. But that's the kind of thing that then something that really changes the grammar of film gets people's attention.
Like you said, you've had all this difficulty with it, but this is your first time out of the gate, and that was a very solid first time out of the gate. I mean, you put together a pretty solid short there. I would love to see... We had discussed, because this battle in space, because of the way they kind of packaged it, we miss the days of, like, back when sci-fi used to actually have shorts.
Uh-huh.
That they would feature. There needs to be more room for people from various backgrounds to bring forward their stories.
Well, there's
that they could
there's
share.
Dust, right. You know, the platform I'm on.
I'm just now getting into Dust. I found it on my Roku.
Yeah, but they have a YouTube page. And a couple other things I meant to say is that one of the other ways that these shorts really go bad is in the acting. And it's because you tend to have a lot of these sci-fi shorts are made by 25-year-old like visual effects nerds who have these most dazzling, dazzling visual effects. They're totally amazing, but they don't really know how to tell a story, and they don't know how to direct actors. So once people start opening their mouths, it's this really kind of cartoony, you know, histrionic. Yeah. And it's annoying, and it just doesn't – it's not – it just doesn't work because that's not what they know how to do. And I have a friend, his name's Robert Nathan, and he was a showrunner for Law and Order. And he's my mentor, really. And so I learned screenwriting from him. And we wrote a couple of things together, and you know, nothing. There is a movie that got made that's totally bizarre, and I'll tell you about it later. But a very weird indie that we made together. But I learned from him, like, how do you tell a story, and how do you write for actors, and how do you find those emotional moments, and then how do you direct actors so that things are sculpted, and so that it has you're constantly focused on relatable human behavior. So when it got time to directing those actors in that spaceship, we were really using the space and treating it like a play, and really thinking, okay, if you really are, you know, telling this guy something he doesn't want to hear, I want him to be walking away. And then, you know, when you like something, let her get a little closer. When you don't like it, get a little farther. It's all this stuff that people actually would do in reality, in this very heightened hyper reality that is the sci-fi world that we're in. But I learned from Robert how to build exposition into the narrative. And that's something that most of these people just don't know how to do. But, you know, I'm not 26, I'm 46. So I've had time to learn this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been a big fan of indie film for a while now. And I have several friends who are indie filmmakers. And I always support their films and I enjoy their films. But even with all that being said, there are times where it's like, yes, but that is just your neighbor that you have in that role, or that's your brother, and they're not actors. They're not professional actors. Sometimes you get lucky and they can actually pull it off. But a lot of times, not so much.
it's unrecoverable. Right. If something is miscast, it's unrecoverable. And then if it's not directed well, you only need one moment to be like so wrong that it's then unrecoverable. It's a very, very educating experience, you know, mm-hmm. making these things and constructing them.
Well, you made some solid choices to hold out for the people that you got, and to push for the way that you wanted it all to unfold.
Well, thank you very much.
Me hearing that is essentially your first shot at directing, it showed a level of maturity that didn't look like somebody's first try.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully next time I'll be on Ed Wood. My next one will be better.
I'll take that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to make stuff. It's fun. It is scary. It's scary when you're directing. You know, it's up to you to decide when you have got the moment. You know, you got to be looking at the clock because there's a deadline. We had to be out of that spaceship set. But, you know, only you know when you've got it. So it's when everybody else is like, it's fine for sound and fine for lighting, and nobody else knows. That was something that really surprised me, that I didn't realize about directing, especially because I, you know, it was such a skeleton crew. There was no one, like, I was the only person to say whether I liked it. You know, the script supervisor was kind of helpful. She would say, that was pretty good, you know. But if I turn around and say, do you guys like that? It's like, you know, there was no one there to do that because the light guys are watching the lights, you know, they're watching it for camera. The sound recordist is making sure it's clean, but they're not there saying, you told the story well. And the AD just wants to keep going because he wants to make the day. So it's up to me to say, I know that we're breaking for lunch, but this isn't done and I need to go further. And then it's up to you to say, okay, how much more can I push this actor to be more emotional or to try and do this line a little bit cleaner or to get a little bit softer or a little bit more real? Because it's hard work. They had to do a lot of emotional stuff in kind of very adverse circumstances. But they were very good, and yeah, Tom and Jess, they were very good, and I was felt very very lucky to have them. I'm always sort of mindful that when I do one of these interviews, that people who made the movie might listen to it, and so I always want people to know how grateful I am that I was able to work with them, and how appreciative I am of their being a part of it, and to you guys too for wanting to ask.
No, I'm just glad we were able to figure out. I mean, we should have done it before we actually started talking about the film that we saw it in. We spent like the night after digging through and trying to figure out all the different filmmakers' names and trying to track down and figure out who did what and everything. And
yeah, we were given this screener to watch, and we just kind of popped it into our lineup, and then became fascinated in our horror of how it was put together, but what good stuff there was in it despite itself.
And then not being able to say, okay, well, it was this person that did this, and so we really need to compliment them. A little bit like you were saying, you want to say something nice about the people that, you know, worked with you. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to give credit where credit's due, and we're watching this and going, I have no idea. There's really...
I still don't know. I don't know who the other filmmakers are or who produced it for the company that put it together. Mm-hmm. Are you guys Ghost in the Shell fans or Robotech fans or both?
Back in the day.
Did you recognize the voice on the radio?
No.
Richard Epcar, that's Lunk, and also Ben Dixon from Robotech.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. And he's Bato awesome. In Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
And he's a...
Yeah, I wasn't much a Ghost in the Shell, but Robotech, it had its time.
Did you watch Macross Plus?
I did.
He's Gold.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Is he?
And did you know who the hero of Macross Plus is? Brian Cranston.
No.
It is.
I had no idea.
Wow. I had no idea either. I rewatched it. I was like, what? And I was listening and I was like, oh yeah, it is. It's Bryan Cranston, you know, well before, I think even before Malcolm in the Middle, but definitely before Breaking Bad. But I always liked Richard Epcar as a voice actor. And so I needed these, I wanted that voice on the radio. And so we just, you know, we hired him and I wrote out the lines and he recorded the lines at home and sent them. And I asked for a couple of retakes, needed the retakes. And now I have Ben Dixon and Ben Dixon's voice in my movie, which I really got such a kick out of.
That is very cool.
Well, you're the soundtrack guy. For Macross Plus, I was obsessed with the soundtrack.
Oh my God. I love Yoko Kanno.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
She's the best.
No, in fact, I could probably talk to you more on that front all by itself if we had all night, because my entire music catalog and love of music all spawns from TV and film.
Oh, cool!
Everything I own almost entirely in my music catalog came from a soundtrack.
Well, me too. I mean,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so I could just spend all the time on that too, but I've probably purchased stuff that you were responsible for getting out there in the
well,
world.
Well, cool. Well, thanks. Do you have the Star Trek 15 CD box set?
I do not have that.
It's out of print. But you could get most of the discs you can get that is digital downloads. I did a lot of Star Trek albums.
I went as far as having like the sound effects.
Yeah, I love that album. I love that. Yeah.
So those are all awesome. But we could disappear down.
I guess you have a 1 hour show, so I guess we should get off.
It wouldn't turn us. We've turned out some pretty long ones in the past.
All right. Well, I definitely want to check out more of your shows, and if anything else ever comes up, I'm happy to be on again. Or if you ever have questions, especially about movie music, that maybe I could help you with, I'm happy to try and help.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we'll definitely be following you and whatever endeavors you have in the future. We'll try to keep our ear to the rail. Mm-hmm. And we'll keep our fingers crossed for Sky Fighter, the major motion picture.
Let's hope. It'd be awesome on Netflix. It'd be so obviously a Netflix movie. I could make that movie so good. I could make that feature so good.
Yeah. Well, Lucas, I really appreciate you taking time out of your evening to come and talk to us about this, and we were thrilled to get a chance to talk to you about it, and very happy to be able to express our enjoyment of this, and I hope it comes across that how much we just really appreciate. I love indie films, and when it's done right, I love it even more. So,
all right, well, I wish you a running universal.
As I always say, we can critique whatever, but I always have an appreciation for the fact that people have put their time, money, and heart into doing these things for our entertainment. I can never take away that.
Well, thanks.
So,
All right, and thank you guys. So
appreciate you for your work.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate what you do. You're my peeps. I love, I come from fandom. It's really in my heart, and I'm always a fan.
Yep. All right. Well, again, thank you very, very much. And good luck with everything. I hope it all works out.